Welcome to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And I'm happy that you're here with me because it's my birthday. Yoo-hoo! So I just got an emotional half hour of beautiful comments.
A full hour.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Beautiful comments and surprises from my beautiful radio husband, Mark Manning, along with Chato Villalobos and Jenny Mendez, Philip Luell, who's our station manager, Barry Lee. Everyone came together and just said some really beautiful things. So now I can die. Because it is Day of the Dead. This is All Souls Day, November 2nd. And with that, the Latin culture celebrates Day of the Dead. And it's not the Mexican Halloween, but, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But right now, I want to bring up Miguel Morales, who's on the phone, who's written a beautiful Day of the Dead poem for to honor people that are no longer with us. And Miguel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Beautiful. So
good to be with you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for the last hour. Wonderful support and beautiful words. Give us the premise behind the poem that you had written.
For the last 4 months, I've been thinking about the Pulse shooting that happened in Orlando, and this being the Day of the Dead, and we're honoring the people we have lost, I thought that I needed to write something about them. And I started thinking about the monarch butterfly, because the monarch carries the souls of the dead back to the living so we can celebrate. But then in Spanish, a word for gay is mariposa, which is also a word for butterfly in Spanish as well. Mm-hmm. So and then monarcas is like an heir, like a ruler, but since it's the feminine form, that means it's like a queen. So mariposas and monarcas are basically slang words for being gay, but they're also the butterflies that carry the souls of the dead. So I just thought I had to write something about that.
And I want to say, as the names of the deceased were announced, that you also posted something that was really beautiful on Facebook, which was the presentation of each name.
Yeah, I just you know, instead of kind of getting into the anger and the hysteria of this tragedy, which people have the right to do, I just thought, you know, I needed to be quiet, I needed to be still, I needed to honor the people's names. And actually, when I heard about it, I immediately thought, oh, my gosh, the names are going to come out, and they're going to sound like my name and your name and these Spanish surnames, and I don't know if I'm ready for that. So as they came out, you know, one by one, I just posted them and kind of said, let's honor them and present them. You know, they're here. They were alive. They meant something.
Beautiful. So, yeah. Well, if you would please read your
Sure.
poem.
Yeah, it's called Mariposas Monarcas. Last year at work, they printed Facebook pictures and selfies of their lost family and friends, pictures of them at the pride parade or dancing at the club on Latin night. They placed them on altars next to candles bought from the mercado down the street where you can buy lottery tickets and menudo on Sunday mornings. They picked flowers from Mama's garden, including the sweet pink and yellow milkweed grown for the return of Los Mariposas Monarcas, who safely ferry the souls of their beloved dead. In the kitchen, they wove blossoming miracles into the curved wire frames Papa built in the backyard the week before on his day off. While cutting elaborate papel picados, they snuck pieces of pan dulce meant for the Los Muertos, and told embarrassing and funny stories of their cherished loves. Tears flowed, not from sadness, but from laughter. This year, at work, we print off their Facebook pictures and selfies. We remember them. We light candles, and we dance, waiting for them to return. Those mariposas, monarcas.
Beautiful. So beautiful. Thank you, Miguel.
With
this, I also want to mention that you were instrumental in putting together an altar for the Pulse victims at Matty Roads, right?
Yeah, I was one of the people who said, you know, we need to do something here in Kansas City. And so there's an altar, there's an outdoor altar there. And I think this weekend is the closing ceremony. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a closing ceremony of our own. And I thought, you know, the people, they went to Pulse to dance and to have fun and celebrate with their friends. And let's do that. Let's finish that night with them and for them. Let's dance. So we're going to have like a short little open mic where we can talk and read poems and talk about our feelings, but also we're going to bring music and we're going to dance and we're going to celebrate with those who've returned with us. So
beautiful.
I'm excited. I'm ready for that.
And then
I'll be reading with you at the Nelson.
Yes, that's Sunday. Yes.
Yes.
And for more information about the Day of the Dead Festival at the Nelson Atkins Museum, the website is nelson-atkins.org. I should have that memorized by now. But thank you so much, Miguel, for calling in and being a part of this. Thank you for your beautiful, magical words and compassion for others. Thank you so much.
Well, I thank you for giving this voice for artists that's so vital in this part of the country. Thank you so much, Maria, and happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. Welcome back to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Thank you for making us a priority this afternoon. From noon to 1 o'clock every Wednesday, we're here. And today we're celebrating the Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos. And, you know, we have just some really terrific guests in the studio today to talk about their connection and their contributions and talk about Day of the Dead. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Day of the Dead, it is a holiday celebrated in central and southern Mexico during November 1st and 2nd. And even though this coincides with the Catholic holiday called All Souls and All Saints Day, the indigenous people have combined this with their own ancient beliefs of honoring their deceased loved ones. And again, I may mention that it is not Mexican Halloween. So in most of the villages in Mexico and cities, beautiful altars or ofrendas are made in each home, and they're decorated with candles and buckets of flowers, marigolds, bright red coxcomb, there's mounds of fruit, peanuts, plates, everything that person enjoyed in life. You'll find this on the altar to celebrate them and to honor them. Sometimes toys and candies are left out on the altar for children who have passed away. The innocents, the angelitos, November 1st, they are celebrated. On November 2nd, cigarettes and shots of mezcal are offered to the adult spirits. And I believe it's also those who don't have family that are out there have died alone, that they are also honored on November 2nd. There's little folk art skeletons and sugar skulls that people buy or they make, and they also put that on the altars. So when you see a lot of the Day of the Dead calaca skeleton skulls, just realize that there's something much more to Dia de los Muertos. As Miguel mentioned, the monarchs who fly back on their way to Mexico, to roost in Mexico for the winter, they are considered the departed souls of our friends, families, and loved ones. I want to introduce a good friend of mine who's been around. He's like a little brother to me. I absolutely adore him. Chato Villalobos is a local Kansas City police officer, a community activist, a terrific father. And at one time, he was a hell of a dancer.
Yeah, that was several pounds ago, years and pounds ago. But thank you, Maria.
You were a kid, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he has a special connection to Day of the Dead, as we all do in the Latin community, because, again, it honors the folks that we really, truly love and respect and honor them on this day, the one day of the year that they return to Earth, right?
Yes. You know, the most beautiful thing about Day of the Dead, I love the altars and what they represent. You can see little, they're decorated with like the different things that people remember about them and what, you know, they're honored by, what they ate, the drinks, their, you know, artistic, their favorite bands or whatever you want to do, foods. It's really neat to see the reflection and celebration of the person's life. You know, it's, you know, we remember them, and we stand around these altars, and we were filled with joy and celebration of the life that was and the legacy that our loved ones left behind.
And it's beautiful because the altars do tell the story of that person's life.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really awesome. And I wanted to share, basically, there was a Renga poem written for Linda Callen, who was a community activist, you know, for many years on the West Side. And she, I remember being in the hospital when they announced that she probably wasn't going to make it through the night. And I was there with a good friend of ours, a pastor, who said, you know, she rented her home, and everything in her home she found or was given to her. You know, she worked for nickels and dimes and spent hours in the community making it better, just volunteering, picking up trash, whatever it was. And he said she died with absolutely nothing, no money, didn't own anything. And we all stood there in silence, and then he finished it off with saying, could we all be so lucky that we gave everything that we had, you know, and to her, it was her time. And I often reference Linda Callen because my old partner, Matt Tomasik, and I, we give her credit for, we say, quote unquote, she taught us to be cops. And what she did was she always said, you know, Chato, you have this way with the kids. You need to use that. You need to go out there and use your talents as far as, you know, what this neighborhood raised you to be. And so she really encouraged me to use my heart more. But I want to just, it's a six-piece Renga, but there's about two of them I really want to read in particular as we talk about the altars. You know, Linda, the West Side was her altar. Mm-hmm. There's different parts of the West Side where you can see it's better for children. And that's what she said whenever the people from the community would say, how do you solve crime issues? Her basic line was, if you make the neighborhood good for kids to live in, then everything else will take care of itself. You know, the elderly, whether it be economic, you know, justice or whatever. Like, if you focus on making a neighborhood good for kids to live in, it all gets connected to that. So, and it was funny because several members of the Latino Writers Collective got together to do this Renga, this six-verse Renga, and you can see that's one of the common denominators in all of their verses was just the things that she left behind. Mm-hmm. So the first one I'd like to read is by our friend from the Latino Writers Collective, Cristina Rodriguez Allen. Excuse me. On this boulevard there grows the tree of the community. Her vines and flowers bud, and her nectar spread. Off the streets with something to eat, and a generous hug for everyone. And like the leaves when the fall wind blows, she is lifted high. Linda has been carried home, and her footprints are everywhere. Like I said, you know, when we talk about these altars, and when you see her, what she did for Jarbo Park, she was really a big advocate to get that place cleaned up where kids could play there, because there's a lot of just broken toys, broken glass. It wasn't clean.
She knew how to make things happen.
Oh, she did.
I mean, she was like a woman with a magic wand.
Absolutely.
And people would do anything for her.
Well, and she was fierce, too, and I love that about her. You know, she didn't let you give up. And the other one I really love is, you know, she was a stout advocate for immigrants, specifically the undocumented men of the boulevard, and she created this sanctuary where they can go and be protected from the elements or from criminals and from people who would exploit them in. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite verses from this, from our good friend Miguel Morales, who you just heard share his poem, and his ring goes like, his verse goes like this. From the streets los hermanos gather, rough hands instinctually craft an altar for the woman who, en este lado, sheltered, educated, and chastised them. Yet she illuminated their dignity, even as so many others try to cloud it. Together our gentle, generous hands mimic rosebuds, offering prayers to honor her voice, her compassion, her tenderness, and her strength. And thankful for those very seeds she planted in us all.
Beautiful. You know, there's something so powerful about the words and saying them about a person who has passed, because it just really honors who they were and what impact they had on us and the community.
Absolutely. And when you look at what the West Side was, as the history of the West Side, and how all the people of that neighborhood came together, they didn't move out, they stayed, and
yeah,
weathered the times that we went through when we were one of the high crime neighborhoods. But it started originally as a working class immigrant mm-hmm. neighborhood, and we got back to that. And you see how all these community centers started popping up with yeah. namesakes like Irene Reese Library and Tony Aguirre Community Center. You know, Linda was one of the people, like, in the history, the Dorothy Gallagher's,
right.
you know, the Maddie Rose's. I think her name should be mentioned with those, the things that she left behind. And that's why I like to say that the West Side is her altar.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. I know that my father grew up on the West Side, and, you know, as a kid of the 60s, it was tough back then. And that's why we moved away from the West Side and moved south of Kansas City to avoid sort of what was happening, you know, and it was a tough time.
Yeah, it was time. Very much so. And so just the Day of the Dead, it's just so beautiful that we get to come together and celebrate those that we love with just honoring and the creativity of those altars. And so I just really want to thank you for this opportunity to share, you know, Linda's story and the altar that was hers.
Well, I truly appreciate your time, because I know you're a very busy man, as I mentioned, a police officer, single father, and everything else you do in the community, which is just such a tremendous value to us all. So thank you for your service and your commitment and your dedication and passion. That you're tireless when it comes to the community that you love and the community you serve.
It's my absolute honor, Maria. Happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend. And we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio on 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, KKFI. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending this afternoon with us. We love having you here. And again, we're talking about the history of the Day of the Dead, Día de los Muertos, which, you know, more and more people are beginning to understand or recognize the significance of this holiday and how it's celebrated in central and southern Mexico. And you know, the November 1st and November 2nd are the days of Día de los Muertos. People will go and in Mexico and buy flowers and candles and toys and food, and they'll clean the cemetery, the gravesites of those who have passed away. And later on in the evening, when they've cooked food and the favorite food of the people that have passed away, and they take everything into the cemetery, and they'll spend the night there. A lot of music and incense and candles. It's a very big celebration. It's not a sad time for people in Mexico. It's that day where you honor those loved ones that are no longer with us. But I can tell you who is with us right now. We've got Rodolfo Moran, and he's here. He's going to share his experiences of Day of the Dead and so on. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. So growing up, is this a celebration that you celebrated in your home or in Mexico, or how was it for you?
Yeah, we practiced it in my household. It was a lot more subtle. There was never any, like, vibrant colors. It was like some cacahuates from Maya Pa Rodolfo, some water, some candy, and a portrait of his with some flowers. Yeah. And it was very sort of, it was very minimal. And I think I really held on to that kind of growing up and being as an artist and kind of developing this language and work that revolved around Día de los Muertos. And being a part of Maddie Rhodes' Día de los Muertos show early on in my career really helped out and really helped expose me to other people of different viewpoints of honoring their loved ones and just seeing the rich and beautiful colors and textures. And, you know, I really practiced that and I really absorbed and became more proud of my heritage by being involved. And at the same time, as I kind of got further into my artistic practice, I kind of started to recede a little bit more into myself as far as my art. And I started to draw these images or create this lexicon for the Día de los Muertos that no longer showed representation of the sugar skulls. Mm-hmm. For me, it had become something very personal by collecting these mementos and you know, the power of imbuing objects with that sort of memory or that power. And I think that really has still kind of carried into my work, even what's kind of present at the Kemper, or what I have on exhibition at the Kemper right now. It's these vignettes or these altares that are kind of very simple, but once again, it's honoring these individuals that have had some sort of importance in my life, people of the Latin or queer community that I sort of want to embrace or uplift and remember fondly, but still sort of be subtle and, you know, a lot of sentimentality, you know, put into the works.
There's a tremendous amount of power in something that's quiet. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
And when I listen to you, and I know your work, and I've seen your work, you know, there's so many different ways to really sort of translate what's happening in Day of the Dead and how you approach it, how you feel about it, and that individual. And sometimes it's screaming with the color and the smoke and all of that. And then sometimes the quietness of altars that I've seen in Mexico. Of course, there, a lot of people are farmers or they don't have a lot of money, so they use what they can. But for you, it is a choice, and that there's a power in the small or the quiet.
Yeah, a lot of power in the personal and the sort of personal attachment that you can bring to it. You know, I was very excited to see the Día de los Muertos being sort of recognized more in mainstream community, and kind of being able to see those sort of motifs available or around stores or kind of just imprinted on things. And I think initially I was excited, and then I kind of started to think about these images and what they really represent, and if whether people were aware of kind of the backstory of it. You know, I'm first generation Mexican American Midwestern boy here. But one thing that my parents carried when they immigrated was their culture and was their beliefs and that sort of part of it. So to sort of see it grow so largely now and to be celebrated by other people, it's like having that favorite song that, like, no one has heard until they, like, play it on a commercial and then everybody's downloading it. So it's kind of weird. I'm being a little protective and defensive, but I have to just kind of let it go a little bit. And if not be upset, just at least enlighten people or kind of show people the different aspects of this celebration.
It's a learning moment, in a sense, for you.
Yeah, like I said, I've been doing this for many years, and like I said, just to kind of, it's very personal. I'm a Chillón, so every time this holiday comes around, I just think about like my friends, like or friends and loved ones that have passed away, and it becomes this very sort of heavy moment, but also something very light and I don't know, just ever connecting to kind of be with these people and to create work that allows me to connect with them and then allows other people to connect to them.
Do you think there's a bastardization of what's happening with Día de los Muertos? You know, for instance, when I go into a world market and I see a lot of figurines and mostly they're going to be skulls and skeletons, and you flip the underside and it's made in a country that wouldn't normally celebrate.
Yeah, I think for myself, I'm trying not to be that sort of angry Mexican, but
bad hombre.
Like I said, I think I just have to, like, for me, it's like if you were to think about Valentine's Day and how commercial that is now, and like if I were to ever want to show anyone some sort of give someone a card or show that example of love, I would make something because, and that's just me. I know that I have the potential to like make a card myself or to really be thoughtful and collect things that they would like. I think same thing for Día de los Muertos. I would never go to a store and get a tablecloth that has like a printed like sugar skull on it and throw it on a altar and call it a day. For me, it's this way to connect with my friend Tony. His favorite candy was bocce, which I think is a European candy. But so I went to World Market myself to get that candy for him because I know he liked it, and I took it to his grave site, and I kind of sat there with him, and I just had this really good moment. I played like one of his favorite songs, and mm-hmm. for me, that's what it's kind of about. I can't really just make those things up. I have to really kind of dig deep, and that's what I want people to eventually maybe see, is like really reaching inside yourself and bringing something more authentic to that revolves around this holiday.
Absolutely. Now, you did mention that your work is up. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Where our listeners can see your work?
It's at the Kemper in the Crossroads. And that work also kind of plays, almost has a sort of undertone of honoring and deceased loved ones. And you and Chata were talking about the West Side, and, you know, I was from the West Side, I'm still. So the work there has these sort of vignettes or these altares that are kind of dedicated to, Michoacán, where my mom's from, the West Side, like my Padre Rodolfo starting his business there and sort of helping out the growing Mexican community there by, you know, providing his queso frescos and chicharrones. But like I said, the work is an accumulation of these individuals that have had an importance in my life and sort of collecting these objects that could further tell their story through photographs, hand-drawn elements, mm-hmm. Tchotchkes that I find around town, and I don't know. It's a good marriage of my parents' traditions and customs, like Catholicism and the Los Muertos, mm-hmm. and sort of what I'm bringing mm-hmm. Now here.
Making it your own,
yeah.
In a sense, yeah. So how long will the work be up?
At least till January, early weeks of January. Mm-hmm. So it's been a good ride, and like I said, I'm glad that I'm able to at least make this demographic of people a little bit more visible, mm-hmm. you know, the land community, the West Side in particular, mm-hmm. you know, it's my home, and there's a lot of great things happening there. There's a lot of, I think there's an important message to be told, and I think I definitely want to be a part of that and sort of show this land pride even more.
And I think, you know, of course with Facebook friends and all that, but I've seen postings of you writing about the West Side, about the store that burned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your grandparents?
Yeah, my father had a Mexican restaurant on Southwest Boulevard and Southwest Boulevard and Summit, mm-hmm. and that burned down in like 95, and then we moved over two blocks over by Johnny's Market, if mm-hmm. anyone remembers that, and then it burned down again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think... the show at the Kemper actually called it La Familia de Mala Suerte, mm-hmm. because at the time growing up as a kid, I thought all this bad stuff happening was because my family was cursed. Like I said, a combination of the gang violence that mm-hmm. I kind of witnessed as a kid, the passing of elder family members, the burning of my family's business, my brother being deported. There was just a lot of these very heavy, situations that were happening, and the way I rationalized it as a very sensitive kid was that it was just attributed to bad luck and superstition.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we're all full of that, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, as I have like my amethyst on. It's so true. Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. Is there anything else that we left out that you want to mention? Anything happening for First Friday or...
Yeah, the show will be up at First Friday. I'm just going to keep diving into this project of the West Side, and I'm just going to keep bringing that up to the forefront.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know whether I posted or not, but I'll tell you, I loved hearing the history. I loved hearing the stories, because right now we're losing a lot of... what's happening on the West Side is becoming gentrified, mm-hmm. and of course we're losing a generation of older people that we should be having conversations with. So I enjoy your writing and memories of you know, growing up on the West Side.
Thank you. Yeah, that's actually the direction I hope to go, and it's sort of immortalizing these figures on the West Side. You know, having, I think, a conversation with Chata would be really useful.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You know, I'm still coming out of it. I was still just initially reaching out to the people I had immediately around me. It's time to kind of step out further and to have these stories or have these structures and figures from the West Side and sort of maybe make a book or something that kind of immortalizes them forever and tells the story of my abuelo and my family that have lived there for forever. So thank you.
You know, I can't wait to hear from more stories from you. So true. Well, thank you, my friend. And stick around. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. Thank you for tuning in to KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd with you every Wednesday noon to 1. And, of course, this day is all about Dia de los Muertos and my birthday. So thank you so much for tuning in and making us a priority. I want to introduce you, our listeners, to Susanna Lee, Lucky Deluxe. She's just a... If you haven't seen her in person performing, reading, she is a delight. She's one of the most energetic, intelligent women with a true sense of humor and honesty. And we absolutely love having her. We absolutely love seeing her perform at the Fringe Festival yearly. And she's going to talk about the Dirty Birdie Story Hour here in Kansas City, which all makes sense because, you know what, as we celebrate Dia de los Muertos, there's such an irreverence. You know, there's such an irreverence to life and death. So she fits right in, and we're so happy to have Susanna Lee, Lucky Deluxe, my friend. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I think you are a delight as well.
Bless your heart. You know, like I said, Mark Manning and I have seen you in performance, and you've brought us to tears because your honesty, you're direct, and there's nothing phony about you, and we love that. We love that.
So thank you. It's nice. It's nice that two people appreciate the honesty.
That's so not true. No, you know, especially when it comes to the subject of sex. Mm-hmm. Well, women aren't supposed to talk about that.
Of course.
Women are supposed to be a little bit more passive and all that, but not with you, Susanna.
No.
So let's talk about the Dirty Birdie Story Hour in Kansas City.
So Dirty Birdie Story Hour is a storytelling show that I started 3 years ago in Los Angeles, and it's been running monthly there since. It runs monthly in St. Louis as well, and monthly here in Kansas City. I sort of switched my home base up from Los Angeles back to Kansas City a month ago and brought my show with me.
And you know what? We're glad you're here. I mean, it's LA's loss, but we're really glad that you're here because you are truly a gem. I met you several years ago. It was at, the Dr. Sketchy's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, several years ago. And, you know, I followed you ever since. So we're glad you're back here at home. So you began this program in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us, what will the audience, what can they expect when they attend the Dirty Birdie Story Hour?
Well, Dirty Birdie Story Hour is a celebration of deviance. It's a storytelling party. It's where people get up and tell stories about all the deviant stuff they've done. It's true personal stories, shame-free, you know, judgment-free.
Yeah.
It's a safe place to... I hate to use the word admit or confess your dirty deeds, your dark secrets, but I feel as though deviance comes the burden of a lot of shame.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do with this show is take that shame away so that we can enjoy and appreciate the experiences we've had in life. Because I think that deviance, you know, that's all the stuff that gets you, like, arrested and excommunicated, sex, drugs, crime. I think that is the spice of life. And I think that's the most interesting thing about most people, most interesting things, mm-hmm. is the deviant mm-hmm. things they've done. Mm-hmm. Their deviances, their... You know, their fetishes, their kinks, what makes them interesting, what makes them, you know, the part of them that exists outside the box. That's what I like. And I don't like that people feel such shame and they feel the need to keep these things secret. I wish that we could all just share them and appreciate and enjoy everyone's, you know.
But there's that element of judgment.
Of course.
You know, if I confess to this, what will they think?
Yes.
What will they, you know...
Because we're so good at pointing the finger at everyone else and not looking in the mirror. You know, everybody has something about them. Everyone has a deep secret.
So I will say that tomorrow is the event, the Dirty Birdie Story Hour KC. That's going to take place at Birdie's Panties at 116 West 18th Street. But you have them throughout the year. You have them ongoing, right?
It's going to be monthly. Yeah. It'll be the first Thursday of every month at Birdie's. And it's a very small space. You know, seating is limited. which I think just makes it, exclusive. It makes it cozy and intimate.
Yeah.
And it should be an intimate experience. You know, I think that that also kind of helps people get more comfortable with sharing what they've done if they're not in front of a group of 200 or 300. Yeah. And I like the smaller shows. I like to be able to connect with the audience. That's what I love.
So how do you select the performers? How do you select the readers, the storytellers?
Well, sometimes I go with people who are notable performers in whatever town we're doing it in. And then other times I ask people that I know have good stories, or if I'm, you know, just meeting someone or just, you know, in the company of someone who tells a good story, I might just ask them to do it because, you know, everyone has a good story, not just the people that, you know, you see on TV,
right,
or you
right.
hear on the radio, or right. you know, you read about, or you read.
But I have to tell you, your last story when you were here at the Fringe, it brought me to tears. And
was that this year?
Well, yeah,
yeah.
It was. There was such an honesty and such, you know, just such. I could feel some pain, and I could feel all the things that you felt. You put me there. But I also like the fact that you're raunchy too.
I like the raunchy. I have to be who I am, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we don't oftentimes celebrate that enough.
I agree. So. I agree. I'm definitely not a proper society lady.
So the people, again, that you select, are there anyone that you kind of have in mind that you haven't really tapped into yet? I guess I think about, like, David Wayne Reed,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure he's probably read.
Yeah, he told a story on my last show, and I'm definitely going to have him again in the future. He's a good friend of mine, and he has his show, Shelf Life.
Yeah,
he's just amazing. David Wayne Reed is an absolute force.
You know? You're mm-hmm. right. You're right. Yeah. So, again, that's tomorrow
mm-hmm.
at 8 o'clock to 9:15 at Birdie's Panties, 116 West 18th Street, November 3rd, Thursday.
Yes.
And so is there something else that we need to talk about that I've missed that we didn't cover? I know this goes by really fast, but...
It does.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think we could discuss my Fringe show. My Fringe show had a lot to do with my father, who passed this year,
right.
Day of the Dead, you know,
right.
I remember him. My father encouraged my deviance. I mean, certainly not some of my more specific mm-hmm. things that I tell stories about, but he always encouraged me to be who I wanted to be and do what I wanted to do, regardless if it was... legal or not.
Right. well, and I can tell, you know, when you were talking about that earlier this year, that listeners may not realize that he was Jay Cooper, Dick and Jay, that
yes.
was on KY-102.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I tell you, that was eye-opening for me because I had never heard this sort of conversation and the music that they brought, and it was mm-hmm. just really an awesome time in Kansas City for radio for that station.
Well, they were the first team, you know,
yeah.
they were the first disc jockey team, and so they really, you know, it was such a unique and such an original thing when they were doing Dick and Jay.
Yeah.
It was very, very memorable.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know, I have to thank your father for helping you develop who you became. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else? We need to,
I hope I to know. See everyone at the show. It's going to be a great show. If you can't make it tomorrow, it's the first Thursday of every month at Birdie's on 18th Street.
And listen, promise me that next time you come back, mm-hmm. and I'll give you a little bit more time.
Oh,
a
sure.
lot more time. We'll maybe give us a snippet of some of the stories. Maybe bring a storyteller with you or read
sure.
something. Would you do that?
Oh, I would love to. Absolutely love to. Tomorrow night, I'll be telling one or two stories from my life as a sex worker. So
I love that.
Yeah. They are raunchy, but they're heartwarming and funny. It's everything you could possibly want from a story.
Listen, I had a conversation with a woman who was a sex worker,
mm-hmm.
and I asked her so many questions. She says, do you want to come to work with me? And I said, as much as I would like to, because I'm curious,
mm-hmm.
probably not. But I think there's a whole other side that we don't understand or
absolutely
we're not privy to know.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the with my work, the sex work I've done in Los Angeles was always like at a facility. It wasn't solo. I mean, each customer was solo.
Sure.
But one of the things that I don't think that people really realize is that there's a sisterhood among sex workers, among strippers, you know. And I'm speaking mostly about the girls I've worked with because I'm not trying to be like gender discriminatory.
Sure.
I know there's male sex workers as well. But there's definitely a camaraderie. There's a camaraderie among sex workers because there's things that we do and experiences that we have that are just, they're very, very difficult for people outside of that world to understand. But I love when people ask me questions about it. You know, and I don't mean pointed questions, you know. I mean,
how could you?
Yeah. Well, no, I like that question. I've got a lot of answers for that.
Will you please come back?
Absolutely.
Check your schedule.
And happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, my friend. Ah, it's been crazy. But thank you so much, and
we'll
schedule you back.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Very good. We're going to be right back with Artspeak Radio after this. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd. You're listening to Artspeak Radio every Wednesday, noon to 1, here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Up next, we have a local singer, songwriter, musician, Tim York. And he's been in the studio before performing live for us, and today is no exception. Welcome.
How's it going?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend.
Glad to be here on your birthday. It's awesome.
It's really interesting that we are actually second or third cousins.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of family here.
Right, right.
So, you know, you've got some new music that you've written. And
yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I'm constantly writing all the time, and I just try to keep it going. You know, like I've done a few albums in the past 10 years or so, but I try to keep writing all the time, you know, like I try to write a song at least a week. I've gone up to writing a song a day sometimes, just when I've had more time or more, you know, just a lot of inspiration, different things like that. But I just try to keep it going, you know, because, I mean, and it's honestly just something that I love to do, you know.
And Tim, you've performed around here in Kansas City, Record Bar and other places.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Record Bar, Riot Room, Westport, every venue, every smaller venue at least that I can get, you know, get to, I tried to play at and stuff, and it's been awesome. So
what are you going to perform for us today?
I have a few songs. I don't know how much you wanted me to play, but I have many, many songs I could play. But these are just newer songs.
Yeah.
And they're just ones that I've kind of, you know, written over the past year or so. And I've just honestly just written them. I've put them, you know, made videos, put them up on my Facebook, which I think you've seen a lot of. And, but I'm always trying to, you know, every time I write a song, I try to put it up on a video, you know, on Facebook or YouTube, just to get it out there to people. And, you know, even if I don't have a show, it's a good way for me to just get my music out there, you know, instantaneously as well. Cause I just literally record it on my phone and then I send it right to Facebook or YouTube.
Well, you're Mike. You're ready to go?
Yes.
So,
I guess I
can. This is Tim York, original music.
This song is called Strides. It's a brand new song. So.
Last night I told you that we can only
Take you to write a song?
It just depends. Yeah. Sometimes I write them in 5 minutes. Sometimes it can take me weeks to just kind of perfect it. And if I don't feel like something's right, but I like certain parts of whatever I've written, I just try to leave it, come back to it at different times, and get it to where I want it to be and try out different things. But sometimes it just comes to me. Sometimes it just happens in 5 minutes, and I'm just like, boom, I write the lyrics, write the music, and it happens, and it's, yeah. So.
Now, if you were all interested in learning more about your music,
yeah.
Where would they go? What is the website, Bandcamp, or?
Yeah, Bandcamp. I have timyork.bandcamp.com, my SoundCloud, which is, I think, soundcloud.com/timyorkmusic, or my Facebook, Tim York, just look me up. I have a fan page with a bunch of music on there, and then my personal page, you can friend request me, and that's where I always post my videos that you see all the time. So.
And you're going to be recording soon, right?
Possibly, yeah. I'm always looking to record and, always, obviously writing new stuff, but I kind of wanted to get a collection of a few, just a stripped down, kind of like this, just a few songs, five songs. Just record them and get them down. Just really not, I didn't want to do a lot of production. I've done a lot of production in the past. And kind of just want to do something stripped down. And I just kind of want to, put my songwriting out there, and promote that. I always thought it would be fun to write for people or so I'm kind of getting connected with a company possibly to do that publishing kind of thing, just so I could write for people or write for anything, commercials, I always thought it'd be fun. So, yeah.
You have another song for us?
Yeah, sure. I can play one.
We'd love to hear you.
This one is called All Mine, and I think this is one of them that I wrote in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Which is cool. So, you get to hear it. Yeah, here we go.
About the weather, what else? special. That means the best to you. In you.
A 5-minute song?
Yeah.
Wow, that's gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
really good work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So,
yeah.
You know, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon. And, of course, we'll have to have you
definitely
back.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
For sure.
So,
awesome.
Well, yeah. And when you are ready to release the CD, come see us and we'll...
Definitely. Yeah. That'd be great.
We'll
be
talk
awesome.
With you a little longer.
Thank you so much, Maria. Happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend. Okay, and that concludes another episode of ArtSpeak Radio. So I want to thank Chato Villalobos, Miguel Morales, Rodolfo Moran, also Suzanne Lee, Lucky Deluxe, and Tim York. Thank you all so much for coming in today. Next week, November 9th, we've got Tommy Frank, Jason Pollan, Julie Heimkes, V. Tran, Emma Carter, and Erica Baker all next week. Stay tuned next for Jeff Harshbarger, who's coming up Jazz in the Afternoon. And I also want to thank you all for tuning in and listening, making this the best birthday ever. Listen, let me tell you something. Just surround yourself with really good people, because I know I have. Thank you so much. Honey, I'm going to say it. Honey, I'm coming home.